if you constantly give everyone the same thing to do, don't think for yourself, follow this set of things and we promise it'll work, what you're doing is telling people they aren't intelligent enough to read the energies, to see where things are going, to understand their customers, to understand planetary processes. That creates people being dependent on other people for what they do. And now what we do is have not only workers, but citizens and families where we raise children that way and no one can think for themselves and create a future for how democracy could work. No wonder we can't get people to see this planetary genocide we're involved in and the racial problems that we have that have become systemic.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
Okay, so last episode, we covered this idea of future-proofing your business. And we used an HBR article, as we always do, which is basically, it was by virtually the kind of, the title was basically the same thing, future-proofing your organization, by some of the partners at Bain & Company, which is a global consulting firm. And in that article, they covered six key practices that the authors believe will future-proof any business. And so just to do a bit of a recap here, they are: think ahead when defining business-critical roles. Number two, redefine what great looks like. Number three, don't cut back on management development. Number four, tech up the HR function. Number five, get people to engage with tech. And then number six, figure out what tomorrow stars want from you. We covered our first three as a way of examining how we would seek to future-proof a business as a counterpoint. So, Carol, what were those again?
The first one was stay connected to your essence. That's what makes you non-displaceable, which is the key here. Secondly, learn to read ahead of trends, not trends, but what David Bohm called the implicate order. And the way you do that is you know what is healthy and produces vitality and evolution for all the stakeholders in the system. That's where everything is headed. So keep going there. And number three is based on your essence, based on understanding that sense of what's good for the whole of the system. And you have to have that articulated. You want to have a clear, what we call corporate, body of the whole direction, and bring about a unique offering for specific audiences. That's what really makes you future-proof.
Perfect. Okay. So the next one then, so number four that we have here. So it's a big one. And, you know, as I was thinking about it, I think when we talk about these things, people think this is something you can kind of just do overnight. But can you speak about what you mean by removing toxic HR management and work design more as like a process a bit?
Of course, one of the things that most people trying to do is in doing better, any kind of improvement, is add on to what they're doing. Find out what the best practice is. If you go look at HR departments, and of course, they're trying to tech up the department, we want a capability up, but we want to get rid of the things that have been aggregated and created like an aggregated cement block of toxic things. That takes an incredible examination and an education process where people understand what's behind it. The key one here, there are many, and it's in a lot of the communities we run, but the key one is based on the behavioral model of everything being externally determined. So you have to look at every practice you have and how it is based on the idea that humans can't think for themselves, they can't be self-directed, they can't choose what they want to take on. They have to be managed by managers, by incentives, rewards, recognition, feedback, performance reviews, and the regenerative business has 30 of those practices, and that's where you start.
Got it. So, okay. So as a counterpoint, in the one that they mentioned, as you kind of touched this already. So number four for them was tech up the HR function, right? So this one, okay, this one left me a little bit speechless. So in this practice, the authors are pulling on an example from a Chinese company called Ping An. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And they're the largest insurer in China with a massive workforce. And so the authors propose that in the case of large workforces, relying too much on models that have high levels of human interaction are not cost effective. So I just want to kind of leave that hanging there for a second. Yeah. So therefore, Ping An collects data to generate characteristics of top sales performers and then combines this with views from outside experts and then uses AI-driven interview assessment tools to assess possible job applicants. So this is the future, the authors claim. And they know of no company that is fully exploiting the information that this workforce kind of tool is using. So Carol, you got to help me here, please.
Well, the reason they don't know of anyone who's exploiting it is generic practices kill companies. You can't go survey, find out what your average current salesperson is doing, build some specific model out of that, and then spread it wide and far. Because what makes companies enduring, we might say, is the ability to read the future, build capability of people to head toward that. Now, what they're talking about with engagement being cost ineffective is because they don't build capability. They are looking at participation and other kinds of models. What we really have to do, and there's a worse side effect than it costing you more money, which they're talking about, which is you dumb people down. Now, just think about that. If you constantly give everyone the same thing to do, don't think for yourself, follow this set of things and we promise it'll work, what you're doing is telling people they aren't intelligent enough to read the energies, to see where things are going, to understand their customers, to understand planetary processes. That creates people being dependent on other people for what they do. And now what we do is have not only workers, but citizens and families where we raise children that way and no one can think for themselves and create a future for how democracy could work. No wonder we can't get people to see this planetary genocide we're involved in and the racial problems that we have that have become systemic. Because we tell people they're going to get a generic program. So it's very depressing, this suggestion that they create for our democracy and for the planet.
You know what I'm reminded of? I know I'm going a little bit off kind of our script outline here, but I feel like you told a story one time, I think of when you went to Colgate maybe or Procter & Gamble, when you arrived, there were consultants following people around with stopwatches. Can you, this is reminding me of that. Can you tell that story?
Well, that's happened two or three places way a long time ago. I think the one you're thinking about is Kingsford Charcoal. But because the company that it was inside of was Clorox. And Clorox had a German investor who deeply believed in the model of time and motion studies. You put all of those folks out, you clock them, you figure out who the fastest was, or maybe not all the way the fastest, but pretty close. And you make that the standard. And then you pay people for time and motion, and you teach them the routine automatic way of operating. That one was without the teching part, or at least it has the external, though. Like, we don't know how fast we... And then we took them into Procter & Gamble, where we had people show them how to do multiple things simultaneously. Like, you're running a machine to make tied, but you're also learning how to maintain that machine and figure out how to redesign it. And those are like different levels of work, which intelligent people who've been building the capability to understand the machinery, to take on big promises the team commits to do. And we, you know, Kingsford, they didn't want to do it either. They were being forced to by their bigger company. But then we were able to show Clorox, look, we're going to build the kind of thing that P&G has. And that's why you're remembering the P&G part.
Yeah, it just felt so familiar, kind of trying to get people to function in a certain kind of outline of behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me just gather myself here for a minute. So I don't know if you're going to do another toxic practices list, or if it's just basically something like this throws all 30 of them into a bucket and kind of like tries to win with that kind of formula. But this might win actually some kind of backwards, you know, work design award or something. I don't, in the end, right? Like this is Frederick Winslow Taylor's dream realized to his fullest extent, as far as I can tell.
Oh, humans, it is.
Yeah. Assessed by machines and then moved into positions to behave like machines. And frankly, if this is the future of work, I think you can count us out.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I gave you the behavioral story, but there's also the machine story and the royalty. Those are different worldviews where you have kings and queens telling people what to do. And we've still got that more toxic stuff. But let's move on to the fifth practice that we were, or approach, I should say, that we really want to recommend, which is everything that is not working in a company, in a family, on the planet, everything is a capability problem. It's a capability shortfall. So if you look at your child and you can see they're not doing something you think would be good for them and for the family, it's not a matter of you changing the behavior, which you've been told to do, but giving them capability. How do you build and create an infrastructure kind of process so that they can learn? Well, in a company, that means that what you do is you set up so that regularly you have development. In seventh generation, we had a monthly all day. I get companies mostly to look at every other week doing a couple of hours in natural work teams, which is one set of the infrastructure, to be coming together and learning living system thinking, framework thinking. We're learning self-managing, all the kinds of things you hear us talk about on Business Second Opinion and that we offer in the communities we invite people to join. Capability building forever is what really keeps you going forever, not training, because training means you're giving them the time and motion study version, the best practice version. No, you want every individual to be able to express their essence, see the essence of the buyer, see the buyer's the essence of what the company can bring in its unique offering. If you keep doing that, keep that alive, and people are getting smarter every year, every decade, their entire life, you will be future-proofing individuals. You'll be future-proofing the company at the same time.
So as a counterpoint to this, right, just to kind of tie this back into kind of what Carol's saying here against what was offered in the Bain article. So number five was actually get people to engage with tech. So as you can tell by the title, this is all about externally determining work and behavior. Right. So you're getting people to engage with tech. So the authors use the people. They use an example of USAA, which is an insurance company that's actually focused on ex-military members and their families. So USAA has in recent years started to deploy AI and machine learning based algorithms to better support their claims assessors. But this was all done in the spirit of basically trying to have machines take care of lower order work like fraud detection and stuff like that, giving the assessors the ability to help USAA members navigate their systems more easily and get their claims paid. But the authors claim that this has led USAA to become named one of the most beloved financial brands on earth, actually. However, a quick Google search on review sites suggests that perhaps USAA isn't totally knocking it out of the park for their members. So While the behavior change might be working internally to generate better feedback, it's not necessarily trickling over to their customers, at least as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I didn't go look it up. But anytime you depend on technology, what you're doing is causing people to have zero interaction. You don't develop thinking. You don't develop understanding. You're not connected to customers. It's abstracted away from anything real that you're serving. That in, by itself is a terrible thing to do to a company and to customers and to employees and suppliers, all of them to be working with abstractions. There also, again, is another downside for us as a nation and for the planet. The minute what we have is people getting connected to tech like they're recommending, what we end up with is no capability building, but we end up with everybody depending on social media and surveys and the kind of things that are technologically driven and looking at the averages and polls. And no one is talking about what's right. They're talking about how to beat the polls, how to beat the game, how to play the game again, because it's all behavioral. You're not really caring that you build great citizens with minds that can be great in their communities, in their families, in their governing structures. Instead, it's all a massive game of, like, we keep track of baseball and people bet on the elections. No, thank you. I'm sure you can get people participating in that, which is what they're claiming, but it actually doesn't make them whole human beings and build their potential to really contribute into the world and help govern what we do.
I think also the thing to keep in mind here is Carol and I aren't saying that learning new technical skills isn't necessary, right? That is right. Necessary, I think, in all walks of work. But Carol and I are talking about core capability building for all employees to be self-determining based on a shared sense of how they see industries and markets moving, which I think is very different. And what's dropped out from this practice is a real involvement in the lives of the members that USAA staff serve, rather than mediating every engagement through a customer through a data screen, for example.
Yeah, and it also drops out, assuming they could get smarter and better at being able to make decisions, as you said earlier, for self-managing, self-determining. In yeah. other words, they become the instruments of the technology, not the other way around.
Got it. Yeah.
Right. So let's look at number six, shall we? Mm-hmm. So I talked about one kind of infrastructure, which was a ritual of events where you're bringing in capability that people are applying immediately in natural work teams, like with Seventh Generation, where we met for a week a month in the room. They were in natural teams who were working on things together, given new ways to think and applying it immediately and seeing the power of becoming more systemic. You need to go with that, our number six, which is you need a way to have an infrastructure through which people can feel like they're getting promoted without a limited number of positions based on job titles and based on the idea that they have to compete for that, because it gets narrower as you go to the top. So when we build regenerative business and developmental organizations, there is a hierarchy, but it's of contribution. And as many people as want to climb to the top of the hierarchy, which would take a long time to explain, but basically it's different types of work, as I was saying earlier, where not only can you run a machine or create coding, but you can figure out how to be improving what you're doing and redesigning the system at the same time. If you start to make create the kind of infrastructure I'm talking about, people can make promises because they can see something needs doing that is beyond what they know how to do, beyond what the customer is getting right now, or Earth is getting, the stakeholders, and they or a team of people commit to go make that happen inside of this hierarchy. As it's done, they're able to get people to assess how they've done. There is money tied to being able to be compensated. There can be a full promotion and a new pay salary level because you've contributed and can show you have changed the earnings, margins, and cash flow of the company. And everybody could be side by side by side. So the hierarchy isn't a peak at the top. Instead, it's an inverted peak where you get more and more power on the other end with the infrastructure that is non-competitive among the people internally, but only competitive externally in helping the customer, the consumer, the user, the buyer, the earth, all the stakeholders are getting more for what they need. That's open-ended future, because you're now making sure wherever the world is moving, your entire organization is going there with them.
And so again, as kind of the last point's counterpoint here, so in the article, they talk about figuring out what tomorrow's stars want from you. So in this practice, the authors give an example of ServiceNow, which is an enterprise software and services company. So the company has taken great steps to foster a culture of diversity and inclusion. However, and you know, we've discussed the idea of diversity and inclusion previously on the pod a couple times, but in short, it's incomplete, unfortunately, and riddled with biases. So it's a symptom of working developmentally and contributing to the evolution of life, not actually a fundamental business strategy.
And I want to speak for, again, as I've been trying to do on each of these, the impact on our democracy and our planet for what they're suggesting. Hear what happens when we have people, and this really relates to all six of what you've suggested for them, is we make anything we're going to try and do differently a separate thing, like a program. And so instead of getting, like I suggested, this infrastructure, which gets wider at the top where people are contributing more. And the reason for that is because they, in every promise they make, every change they want to contribute, they're adding in global and planetary social imperatives. That means we don't have a separate social responsibility department, a CSR program. We don't have some kind of philanthropy department that gives a way for other people to do some kind of good. Instead, every action comes in every contribution. Each person inside an organization says they want to create. They have to write into it that plan that they're going after to change the consumer customer's life. They have to write in how they are simultaneously going to improve the planetary process, social and planetary processes. When they can show that and they come back in the end and they don't get promoted, they don't get paid more, they don't get any of the accolades, and they can do that work for the customer, the work for democracy and the planet, and the work for the business in earnings, margins, and cash flow. We are making smarter people who see how financial systems work better when they've integrated the kind of things that tend to become a separate program, separate department, and then it's not counted in the kind of the overall success ratio.
Which, as Carol's saying, is a much more whole and complete way of working, right? But, you know, as like, kind of thinking for a moment about what the downsides are of kind of figuring out what tomorrow's stars want for you, as we talked about before with diversity and inclusion, much like how Western doctors are focused on treating symptoms, well, more treating symptoms than the actual root cause of a medical issue, diversity and inclusion strategies are focused on arresting the disorder of these symptoms, which is why they use terms like anti-racist and anti-oppression and so on, ultimately reducing people into categories and then trying to kind of restrain those. This fragmented approach, unfortunately, drops out looking at a person as a whole with a distinctive potential and essence who can, over time, make an incredible contribution to life greater than they ever could have considered. And this happens through self-development, not behavioral training.
Right. So our six, again, are know what the essence of the company is, drive from that. Get very clear about how you create a corporate direction to make sure that that's part of where you're going. Build the capability of people to be self-managing in that context. Be able to contribute and have everyone growing so they can make a huge difference with their customers, suppliers, and Earth and democracy at the same time. That is what will keep your company around for hundreds and in theory, even thousands of years. And any moment you step into these automated processes, you have created a death knell for your company.
Don't forget to check out the Regenerative Business Summit on Wednesday, December 8th, 2021. The subject this year, drumroll please, the three underpinnings of systemic racism, divisive conflict, and planetary genocide, and how to accelerate their transformation this decade. To find out more, check out the regenerativebusinesssummit.com.
And two things I'd like to tell you about. One is, my last book was called The Regenerative Life, based on 9 meta roles that when we learn to bring those into our life, they bring meaning, significance, and transformation to everything around us. It was built based on an action learning project, which had 150 people involved. There are about half of those people. We have a story in the book. It is now a project which you can do what they did to create the book. If you want to be involved in that, we would love to have you send me an email at carol@carolsanford.com, and it might also become a part of the Regenerative Life Hacks YouTube program. One of those roles I want to add to this was the regenerative parenting role. What it really means to raise children. What's the essence of regenerative parenting? What we are doing is creating a community around that one. And starting on October 23rd, we begin that community. And if you hear this, you will be able to go back, and it's already past the 23rd. You'll be able to go back and let me know you want to sign up and be a part of that. And you can listen to that recording, and we can get you in the funnel of where we're going. Maybe Zach can tell you a little bit about the book clubs that go with this.
Totally. So your organization can also sign up for the book club for the Regenerative Life or the Regenerative Business using an extensive workbook and video online workshops for free. 50% discounts on bulk buys through Carol's publisher and free shipping, where you can find out more at carolsanford.com under books.
And thank you, Numi T, for your dedication and determination to keep sponsoring and underwriting the show notes for this and the show overall. We hope all of our listeners discover what an amazing product they offer, but the whole story behind them about their global creation of Numi T and how they've transformed their lives in regenerative agriculture in every country that they buy from.
This has been Business Second Opinion.